As usual, we're all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's teaching. His doctrine, the only path, the only teaching that exists to deliver all sentient beings from the pangs of suffering, to free us once and for all from fear, grief, lament, and tragedy. Before we continue with today's proceedings, let us take a moment to recognize the fact that we are so extremely fortunate to be students of this great master, to consider the Lord Buddha our teacher, to take a moment to reflect on that. Let us all be upstanding to recite the stanzas that were once uttered by Upali, who was a householder back in the time of the Buddha, when he was questioned by his previous teacher prior to him meeting the Buddha, "Whose disciple are you? Whose methods do you follow? Whose refuge do you seek?" And in answer to those questions, he responded follows. Dhirasya vigata mohasya pabhinna khilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susamachittasya Buddha silasa sadhu panyasa vesantarasa vimalasa bhagavato tasa savako hamasmi akatankatisa tusitasa vantalokamisasa muditasa Kata samanasa manujasa antima sarirasa narasa anopamasa virajasa bhagavato tasa savako hamasmi asansayasa kulasa venaikasa Sarati varasa anuttarasa ruchira dhammasa nikhankasa abhasakarasa manachidasa virasa bhagavato tasa savako hamasmi nisabhasa apamiyasa gambhirasa monapatasa khemankarasa vedasa dhammattasa sanguttatasa sangatigasa muttasa bhagavato tasa savako hamasmi Nagasa pantasenasa kina sanyojanasa muttasa patimantakasa dhonasa pannadhajasa vitaragasa dantasa nippapanchasa bhagavato tasa Savako hamasmi Isi sattamasa akuhasa Tevijjasa brahmapattasa Nahatakasa padakasa Pasaddhasa viditavedasa Purindadasa sakkasa Bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi අරියස්ස භාවිතත්තස්ස පත්තිපත්තස්ස වෙයාකරනස්ස සතිමතෝ විපස්සිස්ස අනභිනතස්ස නොආපනතස්ස අනේජස්ස වසීපත්තස්ස භගවතෝ තස්ස සාවකෝ හමස්මි අරියස්ස භාවිතත්තස්ස පත්තිපත්තස්ස වෙයාකරනස්ස සතිමතෝ විපස්සිස්ස අනභිනතස්ස නොආපනතස්ස අනේජස්ස වසීපත්තස්ස භගවතෝ තස්ස සාවකෝ හමස්මි නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස
And now to observe the precepts and seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Please repeat all together and after me.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Saraṇāgamanaṃ sampunnaṃ. Pānātipātā vīramane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Adinnādāna vīramane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Kāmesu micchācārā vīramane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Musāvādā vīramane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Surāmeraya majjapamā daṭṭhānā vīramane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Tisaraneṇa saddhiṃ pañca sīlaṃ dhammaṃ sādukhaṃ surakkhitaṃ katvā apamādena sampādeta.
Okay, you may all now be seated. Also, before we begin, let us take a moment to invite the countless celestial beings in these 10,000 world systems that are within earshot of this sermon, wherever they might be, in the Deva worlds, Brahma worlds, and so on, wherever they might be in the sensual worlds, in the formless worlds, in the form worlds, and so on, may they all, if they have the merit, join us and witness this meritorious deed. Listen to the teaching of the Buddha,
rejoice in these merits. And if it is merits that they have lacked thus far, which have kept them in the woeful plains, then may by the power of these merits they be able to redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. And for all sentient beings who have been born in the blissful plane, may they be able to listen to the teaching of the Buddha, understand it, comprehend it, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So, as I now make this invitation out to all those beings, reminding yourselves that among them will be mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, siblings, teachers, friends, and countless others who in this long journey in samsara would have come to your help, rescue, and to lend a helping hand. Remind yourself that it is now our opportunity to repay the debts that we owe them and invite them to join us, to witness this meritorious deed. Rejoice in these merits. Listen to the teaching, understand and comprehend it, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Samanta chakvalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajas sunantu sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta. Also, before we begin, let us take a moment to remind ourselves that although today we may be kind, generous, soft-spoken, and well-mannered people, we have not always been like this. In this long journey in samsara, we have not always had the privilege of associating noble ones and moral ones. Virtually always the opposite has been the truth. Our association has almost always been with ignoble, immoral people, the association of whom defiled our minds with desire, aversion, and delusion. Having been blinded in ignorance and attachments, on countless occasions we would have offended, reviled, and desecrated the noble ones. Today, the consequences of such actions we must endure, we must suffer. This becomes a barrier between us and our liberation. However, today, as we have understood the errors in our ways, let us take a moment to seek their forgiveness. Forgiveness from the Noble Triple Gem, the Sammasambuddhas and the Paccheka Buddhas, Arahatta Buddhas, the Anagami, Sakrudagami, Sotapannas, be they on the path of having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sammadashasana, for any thoughts, words, or actions of offense, revile, desecration, slander, or insult, either through speech, body, or mind, that we would have conducted towards them. May we be forgiven once and for all. And as you take a moment to seek that forgiveness, may I urge you to make a firm resolve to never conduct yourself in that manner ever again. So now let us all take a moment to do that. And finally, may all of the merits that you would have conducted throughout this journey in samsara, throughout this lifetime, throughout this year, this month, this week, today, in the last hour, the meritorious deed that you are engaged in right now, may by the power of all these merits, you be able to listen to the sermon attentively, understand its contents, comprehend it, and may by the power of these merits you be able to attain the noble state of Sotapanna and free yourselves once and for all from the four great hells. And for any among you who may have already achieved that noble state, may through the course of this sermon, we be able to fulfill the subsequent stages and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. With that resolve in mind, I invite you now to prepare yourselves to listen to this sermon. I think there's a discussion that we left incomplete that we need to continue with. From at least a couple of weeks ago, if not 3 to 4 weeks ago. It was one of those sermons which I said you'd have to go back and listen to a few times. That is what I recommended. And I promised you not to worry if it didn't all make sense at the first instance, as in a subsequent sermon, I would explain it further and help you make sense of it. So I think today we can continue where we left off. It all started with the time sermon. We discussed time. We asked the question whether time is our friend or our foe. Now, this should remind you of that sermon and the salient points that were discussed. And then we went on to discuss why it is that we are so concerned about time. As a matter of fact, we were able to draw some connections between fear, grief, and time. Let me remind you briefly. What are some of the things that you fear? We normally, almost always, we fear the future. A future event. We are fearful that something might happen, aren't we? You're worried that something might happen, or you could say might not happen, which is also happening, but the negative of it, or the inverse of it. What's happening is that which you want is not happening. So that is what is happening. So you could simply summarize that to say, we are worried about a future event that might happen. As an example, let's say you have been informed or let's take a prevalent example. We are in the midst of the corona pandemic, and people around the world live in fear. They're fearful. What of? They're fearful that they might contract the virus, that they might contract the coronavirus, and that they might be infected. So they live in fear. You don't fear after the event. You always fear a future event, something that might happen. So if you have not yet been infected, and I hope and pray that it never happens to you, but you never know, because the future is never something that we can determine with assurance. So when the future is uncertain, there is going to be fear. Now, take a moment and think about some of the events in the future that you fear. As a matter of fact, everything that you expect to happen in the future comes with an element of fear, does it not? Sometimes that fear may be in very small amounts, but it's there nevertheless. So you're fearful, or I'll use the word afraid, or worried even, whether you might contract the disease, whether you'll live for as long as you want to, whether your children will grow up to become good, law-abiding citizens. Someone who has fixed a date for their wedding will live in fear, will live worried whether that day will ever come, if something untoward might happen. Someone who wants to go out this evening and have some fun, maybe go out and have a walk in the park, lives in fear whether it might rain later on in the day and ruin what seems like a wonderful day. Now, I agree that some things, the fear that comes with that is not nerve-wracking. It does not bother you too much. I agree and accept that. That's why I said it comes in different amounts and just depends on how much you want something to happen, does it not? When you want something to happen badly, as in when you badly want something to happen, you couldn't live without it. You really, really want it. You're in terrible need of it. Then, of course, there's a lot of fear that is associated with that. Like, take, for example, investments. In the investment market, fear is all over the place. If you walk into a stock exchange or a trader's room and look at people's faces, there's always uncertainty, anxiousness, and nervousness written all over their faces. I know this because I've seen this with my very own eyes. They're worried. They're worried about what returns their investments might make. Will they perform as expected? So you see, a future event has the potential to bring fear. Why do I say has the potential? Why do I not say a future event always brings fear? Because it doesn't. It has the potential. What is it that converts this potential to reality? Only a future event which you expect to happen induces fear within the mind. Is that not right? If there's a future event to happen and you don't care two hoots about it, then there is no fear that is associated with that. Let's say, for instance, you don't care very much about space travel. And somewhere in the world, they're trying to launch a space rocket to take man out into space in a commercial space flight. So, you can now fly into space without being an astronaut yourself. If you don't care much about space travel, if these things are not things that excite you or pique your interest, then you're not so worried about it. What if the project collapses? What if it doesn't work out? What if something untoward happens? What if something terrible happens? What if the launch never works out? What if it turns out to be a failure? See, these things don't keep you up at night, do they? Well, just depends on who you are. But these are some of the questions that keep up quite a few people these days. Two names that will ring bells in your mind would be Jeff Bezos and maybe Elon Musk. These two fine gentlemen, I doubt, get a wink of sleep these days, because they're waiting and waiting. And they're waiting anxiously, hoping that their rocket launches will be a success, with the hope of taking man into space in a commercial space flight for the first time. And we wish them well. But you see, the point I'm trying to make and get across to you here, ladies and gentlemen, is that not every future event brings fear into your mind. There is something that has to happen internally that converts a very neutral, a situation that has no effect on you into one that can induce fear in your mind. And that, of course, we understand is expectation. When you expect for something to happen, that is when a future event can bring fear into your mind. Are we all in agreement on that? I'll give you another example, something that might be closer to your hearts. In hospitals around the world, there are people who are fighting for their life. Now, it might be that until I mentioned those words just a moment ago, it wasn't something that crossed your mind at all, and certainly not in the last few weeks, months, or maybe in the last few years. However, if, say, for instance, you have a loved one in a hospital right now, and you await good news, you await news of their recovery, and that they shall return home safe and sound. Perhaps they have been scheduled for an operation. Maybe they have been diagnosed with something, and you wait a positive outcome from the hospital. Then perhaps that future event, whichever way it turns out, can bring fear, can arouse fear in your mind. So why is it that my mention of people in hospitals are all around the world does not bring fear into the minds of everyone that just heard me say those words out loud? That is because there are some among you who have expectations in regard to that aspect, and there are others among you to whom that particular story has no relevance. Why? Because you don't have someone in a hospital right now who is perhaps fighting for their life. So you see, fear is always in regard to future events. Always in future events. It could, even if it is the next second, even if it's the next millisecond, it's always about a future event. It is never about the present. Never. Why is it never about the present? Why do you never feel fear about the present moment? Because the present moment is certain. So you know exactly what has happened. The past is but a memory. The future is yet to come. The present is what is here. So it is only the future, it is only the present that you know with any amount of certainty, with absolute certainty, and therefore there is nothing you fear about the present. So then tell me, if it's a future event that has the potential to cause fear in your mind, what is it that keeps that event in the future in relation to you? What about that event makes it an event in the future in relation to you? What is it about that event? Is it how grand it's going to be? Is it how big it's going to be? How many people are going to be involved? How far it's going to be? How farther away from you? Or how close to you? How near to you it's going to be? Is it any of these factors that determine whether something's a future event? No. Well, the name's on the, as it says on the tin, it's a future event. Future is in relation to time. So what that means is, it is time that keeps that event from you. It is time that has kept that event from becoming an event of the present moment. Now, what is the problem? When you start to make sense of things in this manner, it appears that it is time that has induced fear into your mind. Why? Because if the event would come to the present moment, then of course you'd know with certainty what has happened, or what is happening at least. But because it's a future event, in other words, time sits in between you and that event, whatever that event might be, there is fear in your mind. What if? What if this happens? What if that happens? What if the other happens? What if it never happens? You can't tell for certain because time sits in between you and the event. Now the problem with this then is, when you attribute this fear, because people want to always attribute things to things, right? That is when you can settle. That's when your mind can settle. You need something to attribute this fear to. And what people will attribute this to is time. People, you will have heard people saying, I am sick and tired of waiting. Have you never heard that? People saying those words, I'm sick and tired of waiting. Oh, when is it going to happen? Why do you have to wait so long for it to happen? It feels like tomorrow is never going to come. Only an hour has passed, but it feels like years to me. In all these words, you'll be able to spot a common theme. They're waiting eagerly. What for? That future event to come to the present moment. What is it that's keeping that future event from coming to the present moment? One word, and that is time. Therefore, whenever fear is involved, as people don't know what brings fear into their minds, that's a shame. People don't understand what is the source of fear. Do they? Otherwise, why would one decide to take their life? To escape from fear. Otherwise, why would one decide to take another route? Go another direction? Walk another path? To escape fear. And why is it that people seem to be doing all sorts of different things? Numerous and various things to escape fear. Why does one get into a brawl? Why does an animal attack? Because they see the threat coming from the outside. So when you see that fear is something that comes from the outside, if that is how you feel about fear, then you shall forever look for answers on the outside. And again, time is something that is on the which side? Inside or outside? Time is something on the outside. How do we know? Well, when you want to tell the time, where do you look? Do you close your eyes? Or do you look at your wrist? Or on the wall, or on your phone. See, you're looking for answers on the outside. Oh, you know, back in the olden days, people would look at the sun, or the shadows of large trees, and so on. So when you want to tell the time, you have to look outside. So time is something that is on the outside. It's an exterior dimension. Or an external dimension. So, by the very virtue that it's an external dimension, it ticks the boxes to accept. Or it ticks the boxes for people who want to attribute their suffering to an external source. Because it's on the outside. So it ticks the boxes. Whenever you want to find an answer, or whenever you want to find the cause of fear, that is a threat to your existence, to your happiness, to your well-being, then you want to look for answers on the outside. And if anything that is on the outside has already ticked one box, it qualifies for you to go and park your blame and to take responsibility. So, therefore, poor old time gets the stick. So time has to become responsible. Or time is where you redress your responsibility. For fear. Therefore, time becomes foe. So that is about fear. What is the other main problem that people have? If it's not fear, then it's grief. Pretty much all of suffering can be categorized. Most of it, I would probably won't say all of it, but most of it could be categorized into these two categories. Fear or grief. Where do people think grief comes from? Grief refers to a past event. An event in the past. Something that happened, but not what you wanted. Didn't happen in the way you wanted it to happen. Therefore, didn't happen to your expectations. Either it happened against your expectations, or it didn't happen at all, but you expected it to happen. There again, you have a problem. When you wanted something to happen in a specific way, when you wanted something to turn out in a specific configuration, when it doesn't happen, or it doesn't happen in the way you expect it to happen, now we have a problem, and that problem is called grief. Grief. Now, when people want to find someone responsible for grief, at least someone or something or some entity, someone they can point their finger at to say, you are responsible for my grief, then again, you need to find something that sits on the outside, right? Because do people accept responsibility? Oh, no. It's the last thing on people's mind. So, when they don't like to accept responsibility, now you need to find something that sits on the outside to take responsibility for your grief. And cue time. Why? It sits on the outside. So it qualifies from that aspect. How is time responsible for grief? Or as people would like to think. Well, you see, people say, I wish it never happened. That day in my life, I wish it never happened. So, what made that thing happen? Time. What did time do? Time got out of the way between you and that event, and therefore that event got closer to you, and it came into the present moment and then passed into the past. So it was time that brought unfortunate events to you. Think back at the tsunamis. About 10 to 12 years ago, we had the tsunamis in Sri Lanka. And neighboring countries were affected by that. So people think back to when it happened, and there are many people who think to themselves, oh, I wish it never came. I wish it never happened. What a terrible tragedy that was. Why did it happen to me? So, how is time responsible here? Well, time that stood in between you and the tsunami gradually eroded, got out of the way, therefore bringing the tsunami to you. Therefore, you see, now you have someone to blame. You have a culprit. And some of the examples we discussed a couple of weeks ago, you remember. Say, for instance, a mother who's waiting for her only son to come and spend some time with her. She awaits his arrival, and this waiting game is terrible. So time keeps her son away from her. And then when the son arrives, he says, Mother, I can only be with you for a couple of weeks, because after that I have to return home, I have to return to work. So 2 weeks is mother's greatest enemy. In other words, time. Because what is time going to do? Time shall eventually take her son away from her. I mean, after all, doesn't the prospect of death fear you? Make you scared? When you think about death, what sort of thoughts come to mind? One of the thoughts that might come to mind is, how much time do I have left? Right? I mean, make a good guess, a guesstimate. How much time do you reckon you have left? Are you in the days, weeks, months, or years? Are we talking decades? So what will time do? Time will bring death to you. And what has time done to those who have passed away, your loved ones? What did time do to them? Time stole your family from you, didn't it? So you say, you know, for instance, 3 years ago, my father passed away. See, 3 years ago, my father passed away. Again, my father passed away. And who did that? 3 years ago. Time did that. Time took your father away from you. So therefore, people have this hate relationship with time. And then on the other hand, so we've discussed fear and grief. Now on the other hand, there are things that people like and love and hope for. It could be big and grand things like the end of the pandemic. You know, these days you'll hear people saying, oh, when is it going to end? If you think deep and hard about this, folks, you will begin to realize that this question makes no sense. Let me put it this way. I give you a cube of ice, okay? An ice cube. And I ask you, when is it going to melt? And then you start saying, well, Swami Mahansa, it depends on the temperature. No, I'm saying, no. I didn't ask for all that. Just give me, when is it going to melt? Time. Give me the time. When is it going to melt? Yeah, but Swami Mahansa, it depends on the room temperature. No. I'm not asking about temperature. I ask time. You can't express time in degrees Celsius. Or Fahrenheit. Give me the time. What time is this ice cube going to melt? Now you are struck dumbfounded because you don't have an answer. Why is that? Because the melting of the ice is not something that is done by time. Time does nothing. As a matter of fact, time has never done anything. Time is so overrated. It has never done anything. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to get across to you here. Time has not done anything to you. When did your father pass away? 3 years ago. Why is that your answer? Was it 3 years ago or when he had a heart attack? They say, well, 3 years ago he had a heart attack and that's when he passed away. Wait, your father passed away because of a heart attack, not 3 years ago. Time has nothing to do with it. Think about it. Think, you know, this sounds a little bit abstract. But to get across this point to you, I need you to think in abstract terms. You know, in a conventional world, of course, you know, we'll continue to talk about how things happened this many years ago and how things will happen this many years ago. Is there going to be a recession in 3 years' time? Oh, that's a big question. Is the economic bubble going to burst again? Oh, that's a question for another day. We'll all need to sit around the table and talk about that. But hey, what has recession got to do with time? See if you can try and understand what I'm trying to get across to you here, folks. This will require your intelligent application of what I'm asking you and try and think outside of the box. I'm asking you to think in a way you may never have considered things previously. That's okay. I mean, that is part of the fun of this, right? Has anything ever happened in your life because it was that time? For it to happen? When was your baby brother born? When was your brother born? Hold on. Your brother wasn't born 19 something? Your brother was born after your mother and father decided to have another child. And then, several months later, the brother was born. That's got nothing to do with time. I want you to think about time in a very different perspective. See, we are so used to describing life events using the time dimension that we can hardly justify talking about life events without talking about time. It has become such an intricate part of our lives that we rely on time for everything. What I'm saying is time is overrated. Nothing really happens to time. When did the Big Bang happen? if there was ever such an event. How many billion years ago? Wrong answer. Was it time that triggered the Big Bang? In Buddhist scriptures, we have a different concept about the genesis of all things, but that's besides the point. I'm not really discussing that right now. But you know, most people know about the Big Bang. They'll have heard of it. So that's what I'm saying. When did the Big Bang happen? Is that an appropriate question to ask? When did the Big Bang happen? When did this sermon start? I'll tell you when this sermon started. When YouTube was kind enough to stream this voice across the internet to your home device, that's when it started. 40 minutes ago? An hour ago? What's all that about? Has time ever done anything in your life? But look at people. I mean, they carry a timepiece on their wristwatch, like their life depends on it. Because we need a time for everything. When is that going to happen? When is this going to happen? When is she going to come? When is he going to go? You and I, let's meet tomorrow at... and then you need a time. You and I are not going to meet tomorrow at 6 o'clock. No, sir. You and I are going to meet if the causes are right. And when the causes are right. Not tomorrow at 6 o'clock. The tomorrow at 6 o'clock, you know, that is a separate story altogether. It's like a story that is overlaid above what really happens. Cause and effect runs the world. People overlay the time dimension on top of it, and then they say, this happened this time ago, this will happen this time into the future, and this is happening now. See if you can try and understand what I'm trying to get across to you here. You can. All of you can. I'm sure you can. But I just, you know, this will require you to think in a different perspective. Consider these, you know, these words in a, from a, because it's an abstract concept. Time is relative. In a real world, there is no such thing as relative. Everything is absolute. Anything that is relative is an overlay on top of an absolute world. Take for instance this fan. You have the pure octet. Patavi, apo, tejo, vayu. Varna, gandha, rasa, oja. Absolute. On top of that, we can overlay fan. That's an overlay. You understand what I mean by an overlay? Something that you lay over something else. It's a superficial layer. It adds nothing to the underlying absolute layer. Adds nothing, and it takes away nothing, except for the fact that if you look at the absolute layer, but through the superficial layer, it may be that you don't actually see what's going on underneath. I know this is quite an abstract thing I'm talking to you about here, and there's a reason I'm talking to you. I'm expressing these ideas to you in this manner, which I'll get to eventually. But So this is not just, you know, for the fun of it. But first I want you to try and understand what I'm trying to say here. We think time dictates our life. Does it really? Svakkhato bhagavata dhammo sandittiko akaliko. When you begin to realize the profoundness of these words, you will begin to penetrate through this veil that is time. This superficial layer that is time, this overlay that we call time. And realize that time is simply a construct. It is a construct created for the convenience of sentient beings. Who live in the past, in the present, and in the future. May I take you on a short journey to... So this is a quick whistle-stop tour to the dependent origination process. Remember avidya, paccaya sankhara, paccaya vijnana, paccaya namarupa, paccaya salayatana, paccaya passa, paccaya tanha, paccaya upada, paccaya bahu, paccaya jati. Yes, we've discussed the dependent origination process in greater length in the past. Being or bhava. Do you recall that? Being. Bhava leads to jati. Being leads to existence. You know, I'm not very fond of the English terminology, but it's what we have, so it's what we're going to have to use. I'd much rather just refer to the Pali terms. But if you are struggling with those terms, then let's go with the English terms. It matters not what you call it. You can call it cats and dogs. It doesn't really matter. What matters is the concept. So, bhava paccaya jati. From being arises existence. Being. Why do you need time? Think about it. In connection, in relation to being, why do you need time? You need time to be, right? How long are you going to be here? See, would be a fair enough question. How long are you going to be here? How long were you there? How long will you be there? Or how long will you be doing that? This might sound like a lesson in grammar, but it's not. I'm trying to get across a much more profound concept to you. If there was no such term or no such word as be in our lexicon, so there is no such word, be. In fact, you can't be. Imagine that, a world in which you can't be. Now you can't imagine that, because then there would be no world. If there was no being, then there'd be no world. Because in a world, what else do you do other than be? Right? Is it not when you be, you need to talk about time? Because when you be, you need time to be. Isn't that so? You need time to be. or you can use the personal pronoun variation of that is am. Am. Right? I am. So that talks about a presence. It talks about a being again. Am. So when you say I am, you are referring to a time period. Because I am a doctor, one might say. Meaning, if you plot my life on a time axis or a time occupation axis, you'll get a straight line. If t equals or t starts at the point you qualified as a doctor, then you get a straight line. Whereas if you want to plot this person's entire life, then you have occupation on the one hand, on one axis, and then time on the other axis, then you're going to have a variation. So when, say, for instance, you were, prior to your passing out of medical college, you'd say, I am a medical student. I am a college student. I am in love. That's what they do. I am rich. I'm pretty. I'm handsome. I'm a boy. I'm big. I'm strong. I'm young. I'm old. I'm hungry. I'm sleepy. These are all things that can be plotted on a occupation. By occupation, I don't mean job. I mean what it is that you are occupied with, right? In that sense, occupation. All these things could be plotted on an occupation time axis, couldn't it? Because when you say, I'm hungry, that's not something that lasts forever. Whenever you refer to whenever you use the term am or be or was or were, inherently it has to come with an idea or a sense of how long for. Must it not? You know, you can talk about your life. So, when I was a young boy, I wanted to be a doctor. Now you can start plotting your occupation axis graph or occupation time graph. And then I went to school and then I was a good student. I was a good student. Oh, not only that, I also was a prefect at school. In my last year at college, I was the head prefect. I was. In my last year at school, I was the head prefect. So you see, that can be plotted on an occupation time graph. Then I graduated from college and I decided to go to uni. And then I was a uni student. At uni, I studied engineering. I was an engineering student at uni. Oh, how long for? Your friends will ask. Oh, well, I was there for 3 years. Oh, very nice. How very nice. So after I completed my undergraduate degree, I went on to do my master's. And I did that for a year. So for a year, I was a master's student. I was a master's student. You can plot that on an occupation time graph. Or really, on a being time graph. You see, each of these things define your existence at a given point in time, did it not? Is this clear as mud? Don't worry. I'm trying to, from time to time, we discuss day-to-day things, right, and we answer people's questions and right, address people's day-to-day practical challenges, and then from time to time, you know, we need to muse ourselves in something a bit more interesting, right? Something a bit more juicy, you know, just to keep you on your toes, to keep you happy, to keep you engaged. To give you something to think about. Oh, and usually these sermons get a lot more views than the other ones. So whenever we are lacking in views, right? When I get informed, Swaminas, we're not getting enough views these days. All right, I'll fix that, don't worry. I'm just pulling your leg. It's not true. But it is true though that sermons that people find it very difficult to understand, they get a lot more views than sermons that people are able to make sense of. It's very interesting. I'll use the word interesting. Anyways, coming back to what we were discussing. So on our being and time graph, you can plot your entire life. And then if I were to ask you, what, sir, have you done over the last 60 years of your life? Oh, well, let me tell you, son, you'll start. And you'll start from day one. Day one that you can remember all the way up until 60 and go, well, and here I am. A grandfather of 3, a father of 2. I'm a very happy grandfather. Were you always a grandfather? Oh, no. I was a grandfather. I first became a grandfather 6 years ago. Splendid. So 6 years ago, if you go back on the occupation time graph, there'll be a point in that graph where the graph made a change. But, see, the salient point about all of this is this. What made this person a grandfather? So they're saying they're 60 now and they became a grandfather 6 years ago. Meaning? When they were 54. Right? At 54, this man became a grandfather. Is that right? Is it 54 that made this person a grandfather? At 54, I became a grandfather. Really? What did 54 do to you to become a grandfather? That's not what made you a grandfather. Your children went on to have kids. That's what made you a grandfather. What's 54 got to do with that? So what made this person a grandfather was having grandchildren, not 54. 54 was simply an overlay over what really happened in this person's life. There are events that happened in this person's life. Effects determined by causes. So really, cause and effect, completely and entirely and categorically, orchestrated this person's life from one point to the next. But this person, as he feels that he was, he is, and he will be, needs some way of describing these events because he does not understand cause and effect, the principle of cause and effect. So he says, well, at 54, I became a grandfather for the first time. Then 55 came, and I became a grandfather again, a very happy grandfather of 2. And you have no idea how much happier I was only last year when I became a grandfather again for the 3rd time. And I was 59 then, he says. See, if it is 59 that makes one a grandfather, then everyone that is 59 should be a grandfather. Everyone who is 54 should be a grandfather if it is 54 that makes one a grandfather. The truth is, there never was anything that was 54. There never was a 54. It is simply a construct that we have created to describe events for our convenience. Because when we are, or when we be, when we are beings, that's the word we use, right? We are beings. We are human beings. Perfect. That's the perfect word for it. We are human beings. That's right. How so? Avidya pachya sankhara. Sankhara pachya vinyana. Vinyana pachya namarupa. Namarupa pachya salayatana. Salayatana pachya pasa. Pasa pachya vedana. Vedana pachya tanha. Tanha pachya upadana. Upadana pachya bhava. Bhava is being. So we are human beings. This mind feels, believes that it's a human. Therefore, the being that works, that happens right now, is a human being. I am a human being. My being is human. In other words, how do I be? I be human. So therefore my existence is human. Is this making sense? I wish you were here. Then I could look at your faces and gauge whether it's time to change topic and start to talk to you about Jataka story, or whether you're really enjoying this and on the ball and I can continue. But hey, I do not have that luxury. And all around you, you have beings, right? Now, we say we are human beings. What is a cow, by the way? A cow? A cow is a cow being. What else? Because what is it being? It's being a cow. So it's a cow being. What are you being? As in, you know, think of being as a verb, as something that you're actively doing. You're being. Like people say, you know, he's being naughty. Like, take the sense of being in that context. Being, now think of human being in that way. I'm a human being, so I'm being human. I'm being a doctor. Normally we'd say, I am a doctor. Because you don't normally say, I'm being a doctor, right? Grammatically that would be incorrect, but you get the same idea. Won't you? If I'd say, I'm a doctor and I'm being a doctor, essentially you get the same idea. So a teacher would say, I'm being a teacher. I understand, don't go and answer your grammar paper with following these lessons. These are not lessons. I'm just trying to get a point across to you. So in the grammar paper you never write, I'm being a teacher. I am a teacher, right? But think of being as a verb. I am being a teacher. Or rather, you could say, I being teacher. Or I'm being teacher. A teacher. I'm being a teacher. I'm being a doctor. I'm being a mother. I'm being a father. At the school concert, a child dresses up as a tree and gets on stage and says, I'm a tree. And he extends his arms and says, these are my branches. I'm a tree. I'm being a tree. So if you go into his mind at this point in time, thoughts that run through his mind tell him that he's a tree. So therefore he behaves like a tree. Or let's say, if someone dresses up as a lion. So they're playing Simba, Lion King. Now, stage drama. This child, guised as a lion, will roar. And he'll play with his friends. And he'll sing Hakuna Matata. Why? Because right now he's being Simba. He's being. That's a verb. So you see, throughout your life, folks, you should be able to work out all these beings that you... I'm struggling with the grammar here because grammar was never designed to talk in this manner. So bear with me. All the beings that you have done throughout your life, you should be able to plot on this time and occupation axis. Or otherwise, being axis. What were you being at that point in time? But it is a being that needs a time. Because how long were you being Simba on stage? Well, I was on stage for 3 hours. Right, so for 3 hours I was Simba. So you can plot now on that time graph. 3 hours, I was Simba. And then what did you do? Well, I was also in the choir. So when I went backstage and I undressed myself and got into my choir costume, and then I came and sang the song in the choir, no one realized that I was also Simba. Splendid. So when I was in the choir, that was what I was being. A singer. Were you Simba then? No, I wasn't Simba. I was in the choir. So your being changed. That's right. My being changed. And then what did you do? Well, at the end of the concert, we all packed up, and then I had to clean the whole place up. They thought I was a cleaner. So what did you do? Well, I cleaned the place. So what were you? I was being cleaner. That was my being. Then what did you do? Well, after all that, we packed up and I went home with my mother. She hugged me, she kissed me, and she said, "Lovely, what a fantastic job you did today, son." What were you being then? I was my mother's pet then. I was being her lovely son. Were you Simba then? No way. I was not Simba. Were you singing? No, I wasn't singing. What were you doing? I was being my mother's pet. And then when I went home, she washed me, she fed me, she put me into bed, and she read me a bedtime story. She said, "I'm the best son in the whole wide world." So what were you being then? I was the best son in the whole wide world then. Were you Simba? You mad? Simba's mother doesn't put Simba to bed and tuck him in and kiss him on his forehead. I was just being Simba, you silly. I was just being the best son in the whole wide world. So you see, you can plot all these events in your life, and they're not just events, actually they are activities. There are things that happen over a period of time, aren't they? Because they're not single events, they're not one-off events. Because when you're Simba, you're Simba for a period of time. When you're in the choir, when you're singing, you're a singer for a period of time. When you're a dancer, you're a dancer for a period of time. When you're a good son, you're a good son for a period of time. When you're a bad son, a naughty son, you're a naughty son for a period of time. When you're mischievous, you're mischievous for a period of time. When you're generous, you're generous for a period of time. When you're kind for a period of time. When you're rich for a period of time. When you're poor for a period of time. When you're fat for a period of time. When you're lazy for a period of time. When you're energetic for a period of time. So all these things you are being for a period of time. So now, whenever you are being, you have to be able to express that activity in relation to time. But the truth of the matter is, none of those things had anything to do with time. They were all determined, they were all orchestrated by the principle of cause and effect. It was causes that decided the effect, that led to that effect, not time. Time is simply an overlay. But people don't realize this. So they think that time is everything. So much so they'll even say time is money. My argument is time is nothing. Really, in an absolute world, time does not exist. It's a timeless world. Hence, Svakkhato, Bhagavata Dhammo, Sandittiko, Akaliko. Timeless. But to be able to appreciate this, you have to be able to penetrate this, you know, what seems superficially what's going on with this world. You have to be able to look through that and see what's really going on. I'll ask you another simple question, right? Let's say there's a fire ablaze. Okay? Now you know, because we've discussed this example countless times, right? What gives rise to a fire? Right? You know the answer to this one. We've perfected this example. So we know it's what? It's oxygen, temperature, and something flammable. Right? So when these three causes come together, you have fire. Oh no, wait, I forgot. Oxygen, temperature, flammable object, and 6:35 p.m. Did I get that right? Or is it 6:34? No? Not 6:35 p.m.? Is it the wrong time? Sorry, let's try that again. So, it's oxygen, flammable object, temperature, and you give me a time. Any time. Literally, give me any time. Five o'clock, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, what o'clock? Give me any clock you like. Why am I not insistent on a particular o'clock? Because it is not a clock. O'clock is not a part of what determines whether a fire comes to life. So how long has this fire been ablaze? You see, now if you've been following my train of thought, you should be able to offer two answers. One, the conventional answer that everybody knows. Oh, this fire has been light for almost an hour now, Swami Nansa. Okay, what's the other answer? This fire has been ablaze ever since oxygen, flammable object, and temperature. These three factors have been coming together. Have been coming together. It didn't just happen once. It kept on happening. It kept on happening. You see the fire now for the same but different reasons as to why you saw the fire an hour ago. They're same but different. Why same? Because it's the same reason. Why different? Because they're not the same reason. Again, clear as mud? Yes, it is oxygen, flammable object, and temperature. Back then and now. Yes. But is it the same oxygen? Are they the same molecules of oxygen? Are they the same molecules of, say, wood, for instance, or paper? So it's the same, but yet not the same. So is it the same fire or is it a different fire? So see, you have two answers to this question now. Likewise, how long has the fire been ablaze? You have two answers now. One is a conventional answer. That's what I said. We always live in a conventional world. Never do we talk and refer to in our general day-to-day discussions and conversations and day-to-day existence. We don't talk about this funny world that I'm talking about here. This queer, the world that queer people talk about, odd, weird people talk about. We don't talk about that. Normally we just talk about this two-dimensional world where a fire has been ablaze for an hour, because for one whole hour the same fire has been ablaze. But is it the same fire? Is it? Is it the same fire? Now you're stuck. You can't say yes and you can't say no. So is it not the same fire? Is it a different fire? Again, you're stuck. So you see, is it the same or is it different? Are really irrelevant questions about the fire. These are not questions, these are not valid questions about a fire. Same or different? These are not questions that ought to be asked about a fire. Is it the same fire or is it a different fire? But in a conventional world, we always talk about that. Your mother, is she the same mother as she was yesterday or is she a different mother? If you're scratching your head wondering what the hell is Swaminathan going on about? Maybe take a paracetamol and go and get some sleep. Wake up tomorrow and start from the beginning. I'm putting across to you an abstract concept. Eventually I'll get to why I'm putting this to you in this way. But first I need to understand the concept. Is it the same mother or is it a different mother? How about you? Are you the same you an hour ago? Or are you a different you? If they're different, why do we still call you you? That's not right, is it? When two things are different, when two things are so very different, why do we talk about them using the same words, same terms? That's very confusing. But is it the same you then? Are you the same person who sat down to listen to this sermon? Physically, have you not aged? Are you not different? And mentally, have you not changed? When you sat down to listen to this sermon, your worldview, the way you view the world, your set of knowledge, your pool of knowledge, your wisdom, all of that, and your experiences, very different to what it is now, is it not? You have changed. So what about you has remained fixed? What about you has remained fixed? Is it your body or is it your mind? I'm asking you questions and I want you to think and come up with answers. Even if you don't come up with answers, that's okay. Think. Silently, think. Ponder. Contemplate. If you are body and mind, okay, if that is what you are, body and mind, is it the same body that we have now to what it was an hour ago? Is it the same body? I mean, if it were, then you are the same age an hour ago. In other words, you are exactly the same body, the same cells, so you don't age then. So we should be able to continue that trend, and therefore you'll never die. Because your body doesn't age. But you know that is not true. You know that your body ages with every passing moment. With every moment, your body goes to old age, or it ages. What about the mind then? Do you think about the world in the same way that you think that you thought an hour ago? In fact, do you think about time in the same way you thought an hour ago? Even that has changed, has it not? So, if both body and mind has changed, then are you the same person? That was an hour ago. What about you is the same from an hour ago? Give me a list of things that is the same from an hour ago. It's my hair, Swami knows. Really? No. No, no, they're not. If your hair, the strands of hair on your head, will live on your scalp for, I don't know how long hair cells live, or let's say it's a week, then you're closer by an hour to the end of the week. So it's not your hair. It's my skin, Swami Nasa. Heavens, no. Do you know how many millions of skin cells you shed every hour? What about you is the same from an hour ago? Physically? Anything? The truth is nothing. Okay, what about you mentally is the same from an hour ago? Thoughts? What about those thoughts that passed away? They rose and they passed away. Are you reliving those thoughts? Did you pause them? Bring back those thoughts if possible. Not the same object. I don't mean you can think about the same thing. You know, not the same mental object. I mean that very thought that passed away an hour ago. Go and bring it back if you can. You know, living proof that this is impossible is how when people, let's say friends, right? You make friends and then you eventually become best of friends, right? Then all is good. Everything's sweet and lovely. And then something happens and the friendship, there's a crack in the friendship. Now, let's say that these two friends, they resolve the issue and they want to go back to feeling the same way they did before the problem happened. But they can't. Like a lump in the throat. There's something that always that's there. You know, you can't think back to, I feel about him or I feel about her the same way I did before the problem happened. Especially if it was a big problem, a serious problem. You can't go back and think in the same way about that friend. But if you are able to bring back the thoughts from the past, then why can't you when you want to? Why can't you? You can't, that's why. That's why you can't. Aren't there days where you have good days and bad days? Do you like having a bad day? No one likes having a bad day. So, did you never have good days in your life? So, when you say it was a good day, what was it? What was it about, what was good about the day? Was the sun shining brighter? Was the grass greener? None of that, really. What you said, when you said it was a good day, what you meant was, I'm feeling good. Meaning, you're feeling good. Meaning, you had positive thoughts. You had very, very cheerful thoughts. Very joyful thoughts. You are happy. Right, so today you're saying you're having a bad day. It's a terrible day today. Right, so let's go back and fetch those thoughts that passed away. Last, 2 weeks ago, I was having a wonderful day. 2 weeks ago, it was a marvelous day. I felt on top of the world. Right, let's go back to 2 weeks ago and fetch those thoughts and come back and implant them into the present moment. Go on then. Go back in memory. Go back to 2 weeks ago. Right? You went there? Right. Now get those thoughts back again. And get rid of these miserable thoughts. Replace these miserable thoughts with those good thoughts. Go on then. Can you? No, you can't. Impossible. Why? Because what has passed away has passed away. What has passed away, you can't get back now. So if that has passed away, and if what is here in the present moment is something completely different, they may be of the same type, but they're different. Like twins. They're of the same type, but they're different. Same, but different. It's possible they're of the same type, but still they'll be different. Right? So that being the case then, folks, if your body has changed and the mind has also changed, what then has remained constant about you? Name it if you can. But Swami Nuhansa, 2 weeks ago, I was a doctor. Today, also, I'm a doctor. So that has changed, that has remained the same. I'm a doctor. Indeed, what you're saying is, I am being a doctor. I was a doctor, I'm a doctor, and 2 weeks from now, you will be a doctor. You might say. But really, as we discussed a moment ago, it is not time that has decided, that has determined that you are a doctor. If the medical council decide to strike you off the register, you are no longer a doctor. So it is not time that makes you a doctor. There are causes that make you a doctor in this present moment, and in the next 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 moment, and so on. It's not time that makes you a doctor. It's not time that keeps you a doctor. It's causes. So you see, cause and effect is what rules the world. Cause and effect is what dictates, is what orchestrates everything that happens in the world. But we as sentient beings, because we are beings, right? In fact, this sense of being excuse me. This sense of being in itself is an overlay, don't you think? I am being a doctor. For how long? Well, it's been about 5 years now since I qualified. Ever since I've been a doctor. Really, what has happened is, in every moment, in that period of time, there were causes that determined or that manifested a doctor, cause and effect. In the next moment, there were causes. In the following moment, there were causes. In the following moment, there were causes. And then every moment since, there have been causes. Causes have given rise to effects. Time is simply an overlay. And with time, with the time factor, the mind feels that back then I was a doctor. Today I am a doctor. And in the future I will be a doctor. That somehow being a doctor is something that has a relationship to time. Really, being a doctor has nothing to do with time. What it has a connection to or a relationship to is causes. Remember, it is not time that made you a doctor. Time had nothing to do with it. Give me anything in this world that is a result of time. Name one thing in this world that is a result of time. Something real, not superficial. Like you could say, today is my 25th birthday. I mean, that is a convention. That if you lived on Jupiter, today wouldn't be your 25th birthday. Today is your 25th birthday on Earth. Why? Because 25 times the Earth has circled the Sun. That's a convention to be calling that your birthday. That's not real. What if the Earth slowed down, going around the Sun? Now, your birthdays wouldn't come so frequently. What if it went faster? Then, your birthdays would come much more frequently. So, that being the case, then it's not an absolute concept. It's a convention. People around the world have agreed that every year, let's say, it's an anniversary. And every year, let's celebrate my birth. A period of time has been determined as a year. And someone decided one day that let's say a year is the time it takes for the Earth to go around the Sun. Let's say a day is the time it takes for the Earth to do one rotation These are all conventions. If you lived on another planet, then these numbers would be very different. So they're all conventions. So, therefore, when you say, today is my birthday, today I'm 25, that is simply a convention. I'm not talking about conventions. I'm talking about absolute truths. Things that are real in this world. Not things that you make real in this world. Or that, not the make-believe things in this world. I mean, you had to learn that a year is this amount of time, didn't you? Someone taught you that. If a child is never taught about a birthday, then he'd never ask for one. But ever since a child is born, then it is conventional around the world to celebrate the year anniversary, one every year anniversary. So now the child learns that every year I get to celebrate my birth. Little does he realize that what he's really celebrating is him moving closer to his death, but that's a conversation for another day. So, can you name me one thing? Name one thing which is a result, and causes, or at least one of the causes, is time. Give me one thing. Now, I know you're thinking in your mind, the cogs are turning, right? And you're thinking, well, Swami, what about a cake? When I bake a cake, right, I mix all everything, I knead the cake, right, and then I put the ingredients, and I put it, the flour and everything, and I put it in the oven, and then I have to leave it in there for about 1.5 to 2 hours. So surely, Swami Nansa, it's the flour, the water, the sugar, right, and all that, the butter, and its temperature, and its 1.5 hours that gives you cake. Really? Are you sure? You want to think again? What made that flour? What turned that flour into cake? Is it 1.5 hours? Is it? What's really happening is the heat is working on the flour, on the yeast, on the sugar, on the butter, and all the ingredients. And there's a reaction that's taking place. Provided heat. Provided the right temperature, a reaction is taking place. That's a chemical reaction. At the end of that chemical reaction, you have cake. Time has nothing to do with it. But if you are someone who wants cake, now, here's what happens. If you are someone who wants cake, when do you want it? See, think about it this way, in these terms. There is not really a someone who wants cake, is there? It's the mind, isn't it? And it's a thought in the mind. Because in this thought you want cake, next thought you want carrot, next thought you want to watch TV, next thought you want to listen to music. So, and we know this, because it's not, we don't like live our life thinking, I want cake, I want cake, I want cake, I want cake, I want cake. You know, we don't live life like that. There are lots of things we want. And each thought wants something else, right? So, this thought that wants cake. So if it is this thought that wants cake, it's not the next thought that wants cake, is it? It's not the following thought that wants cake. It's not the previous thought that wants cake. They're all independent of each other. So this thought, when it wants cake, when does it want cake? A year after it passes away? Maybe a week after it passes away? Perhaps a day after it passes away? Because we're talking about thoughts that arise and pass away, right? So if this thought wants cake, when does it want cake? In an hour? In a couple of minutes? In 100 thoughts time? Maybe a couple of thoughts time. Is it? What do you think? Or really, does it want it now? Because if it's this thought that wants cake, then it's this thought that wants cake. So if this thought wants cake, then it wants it now. But does it have it now? No. Because the ingredients were put into a tray and all that was stuffed into an oven. Now, thoughts arise and pass away, each one of them wanting cake, but each one of them individually wanting cake. It's like, imagine you had 10 children at home, right? And each one of them wants cake. Now, if you feed one, it doesn't mean the other 9 are going to be happy about that. Each of them wants cake. Each one individually, separately, wants cake. Or wants cake. Like that. Similarly, each thought wants cake. Individually, separately, all for itself. Now therefore, it doesn't have cake, because the cake is still in the oven. It's not cake in the oven, the ingredients are still in the oven. There's no cake yet. So what happens? What happens now is suffering. Now what you have is fear. Because it's going to take time. Or, actually, it's not going to take time. The mind now needs to explain to itself why it cannot provide itself with cake. Listen to this very carefully, and I'm sure you'll understand. The mind needs a way to explain to itself why it cannot offer itself cake. Remember, it's this thought right now that wants cake. There's no point in giving cake tomorrow, because tomorrow it's not cake it wants. Tomorrow it wants to go and see, walk in the gardens and look at the birds and the bees. It wants to go bird watching. Nothing to do with cake. But right now it wants cake. And there's no cake available. So now the mind needs to have a way to explain to itself, to justify not being able to provide itself with cake. So, who takes the blame for it? Of course. Time. It'll be an hour before cake is going to be ready. It's going to be 2 hours before cake is going to be ready. 45 minutes before, half an hour before cake is going to be ready. So, who's keeping cake from you? Myself? The mind asks itself. Time. Every thought that arises in fear. Might I get my cake? I want cake. Might I get my cake? And the next thought arises, might I get my cake? There's fear. Might I? Then the next thought arises, might I get my cake? Each thought arises, worried, in fear, might I get my cake? And each time, the mind has a way of explaining, justifying, providing a reason, an excuse as to why cake cannot be provided. Why? Because it hasn't been an hour yet. That's how you keep running to the oven to check the clock or the timer. How much longer? And every few minutes you go to the oven and check the time. How much longer? How much longer? How much longer? 10 minutes more? 10 minutes more. 5 minutes more? 5 minutes more. 3 minutes more. Yes, come on, we can do this. Now imagine the thoughts that arise and pass away in your mind. You know, every thought that arises between until the cake has been is offered to it. Never is that thought going to be satisfied, because this thought you only have now to satisfy it, because that thought will never come back again. In the next moment it's going to be a different thought. So this thought arose in the hope of having cake, but cake is yet not ready. This thought will never, in all of samsara, this thought is never going to have cake, because cake isn't ready. Can you imagine the disappointment with which it's going to pass away? Because it arose for one reason. It wants cake. It wanted to eat cake. Now it's going to pass away with no cake. Is it going to get cake in the future? No, not this thought. This thought is never going to come back. Not ever in samsara. Unfulfilled, unsatisfied, this thought passes away. Never to have cake. Dreams shattered. Expectations unfulfilled. Never is he going to get cake. And who's to blame? Of course. It's poor time. Time to blame. Reason time is to blame here. Or reason that blame is attributed to time is because this thought that arose asking for cake does not understand the principle of cause and effect. It is veiled in ignorance, or it is wrapped in ignorance. What is wisdom? To be able to see the world through the lens of cause and effect. When there are causes, the effects will manifest themselves. It is only causes that give rise to effects, that lead to effects, and nothing else. When the principle of cause and effect has been accepted, and wholly accepted, completely accepted, unquestionably accepted, at that point, there is no longer any expectation of I want this and I want that. Because I want this and I want that are all nonsensical in a world of cause and effect. Because it is causes that give rise to effects. If there are causes, then that gives rise to the effect. If there are no causes, then that does not give rise to an effect. You're wanting something, you're needing something, you're asking for something, you're pleading for something, your expectation of something is no factor whatsoever in delivering that effect, that product to you. It's only when the mind understands this, if the mind understands this, will a thought arise with this realization one day, and henceforth it shall not ask for cake or anything else for that matter. Because it has now fully accepted that when there are causes, there will be effects. Therefore, whatever the causes might be, let there be that effect. I accept that. Now, where is room for expectation? Why would there be expectation? Would there be expectation? Therefore, time no longer gets the blame. As a matter of fact, when you see the world as a complete bundle, ball, a complete pool of cause and effect, it's all when you realize the world is full of cause and effect. Why do you need time to explain worldly phenomenon? You flick the switch, light comes on. When? Give me the time. What time? You understand, time has nothing to do with when the light comes on. When there are causes, there is an effect. So when the mind understands this, it is simply cause and effect that rule the world. Would there be any grounds to set expectations? Especially, in addition to this, when the mind understands through the Dhamma that expectation only leads to suffering and nothing else. So you see, expectation never got you what you wanted. But in addition to that, remember, it's in addition to that. It's bad already that expectation doesn't get you what you want. Right? That's bad already. In addition to that, expectation gives you one and only one thing, and that is suffering. So it's a double whammy. Not only does it not give you what you want, but it also gives you what you don't want. How much worse can it get? Could it be any worse than that? It does not give you what you want. It gives you what you don't want. Who wants to suffer? No one does. Why suffer? Expectation. But why expectation? Because I wanted. But your wanting has nothing to do with what you get. It's causes that determine that effect. This is the principle of cause and effect. So people really just use time as a scapegoat. Takes all the blame. Which is such a shame. Because the problem with that is this. It's not that time is going to get you one day and avenge you. That's not the reason. Because it doesn't exist to avenge you anyway. That's why. To avenge you or to take revenge on you. Time doesn't exist. It's a construct. It's a conventional construct. Designed in the minds of people who are being to describe how long they have been or how long they will be. That is what time is used for. It is used to talk about past events. It is used to talk about future events. And then you just use one word, now, to talk about present events. Now. See, in the past, things never happened in the past, did they? Things always happen in the present moment. Is that not true? So let's say today, right? Today, the postman arrives. And you hear the bell ring and you walk up to the gate or to your door and there's a postman, right? So when is the postman here? Now. Okay? So now let's go to tomorrow. And the postman arrives again. So I ask you, when did the postman arrive? Well, he's here now. So now again. Yesterday, what time did the postman arrive? Now. But yesterday. When it was now, yesterday. Do you follow me? The postman arrived when it was now, yesterday. Not yesterday. The postman didn't arrive yesterday. When did the postman arrive? The postman arrived now, yesterday. When it was now, yesterday, that's when he arrived. When it is now, he has arrived. Will the postman come tomorrow? No, he's not going to come tomorrow. When is he going to come? He's going to come now, tomorrow. When it is now, tomorrow. I know what you're thinking. Not two paracetamols is going to fix this. I'll probably need a card and a box. Really, there's only the now. Because what happens in the now, it's nothing to do with time, folks. Now is not something that is to do with time. Now is incorrectly defined in the dictionary. Now has nothing to do with time. The true definition of now is not, it's not anything to do with time. It's not a moment in time. Now is when the causes are right. See if you can replace your definition of now from it being a time oriented factor to one that is to do with cause and effect. When is the postman? When will the postman arrive? Now. Meaning? When the causes are right. Did the postman arrive yesterday? No, the postman arrived now. Meaning, when the causes were right. So whenever the causes are right, the postman arrives. When? Wrong question. The postman always arrives now. When does he leave? Well, of course, he leaves now. When will the fishmonger arrive? Again, now. And he leaves? Now. When does father leave for work? Well, of course. When else? Now. How about mother? When does she leave for work? Now. What time will the train arrive? I thought you'd never ask. Now. Of course. When else? When is it going to rain? Now. When else can it rain? Can it rain any other time? It can only rain now. When will it stop raining? Well, of course. Now. When is the sunrise? When is the sunset? When will the cows come home? When will be the next earthquake? When will Corona end? When will there be a fourth wave? When will the next tsunami hit? When will man land on the moon again? When will you be rich?
When will you be fit? When will you be born again? When will you die? What is the answer to all of the above? Now. What is now? When the causes are right. Because in the world of cause and effect, imagine there was a command and control center somewhere, right, that controls the entire universe, and there's some funny looking alien there that controls the whole universe, and they set in motion, right, whenever there are the right causes, right, this alien guy, he drops the effect. Just imagine that. I know, science fiction, but just imagine that for the time being. Whenever the causes are right, he drops the effect. Do you think this guy has a clock in his command room? Do you think he has a clock in his office? What he does is, when the causes are right, he drops the effect. So, for instance, when a man and woman comes together, he drops a baby. Do you think he looks at the clock? When all the ingredients are right and the temperature is right, he drops a cake. Do you think he looks at the clock? When all the causes are right, he drops light into the bulb. Do you think he looks at the clock? I'm asking you to imagine, right? There's someone out there, someone who always looks at all the causes that happen all around the world. Like some almighty power. Okay? They're always looking at all the causes that happen around the world and keeps on dropping the effects. One heck of a job that would be, if there were someone like that. Some people say there is, but hey-ho. So looking at all the causes, always dropping the effects. So for instance, if you bump into a rock as you're walking on, or as you're walking about, and you didn't see that coming, right? Now he drops a fall, and you fall. Do you think he looks at the clock for that? Okay, at this longitude, latitude, a guy just bumped into a rock. What time is it before he make him fall? Do you think he looks at the clock? A leaf is about to fall from a twig, on a branch, on a tree. And the wind blows. So the causes are right now. So the effect has to obviously manifest. So this guy, he on his radar, this just picks up. You know, there's an alert. Wind blowing, leaf, old leaf. Drop, 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 drop. Does he go and drop? So he drops the effect. Tell me, does he look at the clock? Does he ask, what time is it? He doesn't ask, what time is it? Because time, in his world, there is no time. Because time is not a required entity in his world. In whose world? In the world of cause and effect. Time never did anything. It has always been cause and effect. Always. Always has been, always will be. Things have always happened now. Things will always happen now. Things are happening now. There's only ever been now. Things happened yesterday, but now. Things will happen tomorrow, but now. Yesterday and tomorrow are simply words that have been invented. They have been invented, don't forget. They have been invented
by beings, because they have to be. Because when you are or when you are being, you were yesterday, you will be tomorrow, you are today. So when you are being, you have time. You have to be, right? Because being is something that happens over a duration of time. So therefore, that time has to be expressed using appropriate words. And therefore, people have to invent yesterday, tomorrow, next week, day after tomorrow, next year, last year, next eon. How often does a Buddha arrive into this world? Every how many eons? No. A Buddha comes when? Now. When did the Buddha pass away? Now. When will you become an Arahant? Listening to these sermons, Swami Nansa, I'm wondering if I ever will be. Is that the answer? No, you'll be an Arahant now. When will you become a Sotapan? No. When else? Now. Of course now. Now is not the present moment. Now is the moment when the causes are right. When is an invalid question. Because in that world of cause and effect, in the command and control center of the entire universe, because everything in the entire universe happens under the command of cause and effect, right? So in that world where everything is commanded, everything is controlled, folks, understand this, everything happens according to cause and effect. We, sentient beings in this world, we puny little humans, we beings, we try and explain these events using time. It's an artificial construct. It is not real. It's a made-up entity. So that beings can express how long they have been, how long they will be, and what they have been doing throughout their lives. None of that is true. So in a world where cause and effect determines every single outcome, all events, pretty much everything, see, the Buddha's doctrine is one of cause and effect, right? The Buddha talks of cause and effect. That is his Dhamma. That is the doctrine. That is why one of the characteristics of the Dhamma is that it is akalika. It has nothing to do with time. It is all entirely, completely determined by cause and effect. Now, when we understand this concept, when we understand that it is all cause and effect driven, and there is nothing here that is truly driven by time, we begin to see the world and everything that happens in the world in a very different light. We realize that things don't happen at a specific or given time. Therefore, it makes no sense to wait for something to happen. People say, please wait your turn. Please wait for this, for X to happen. Please wait for Y to happen. And that waiting game is not fun, is it? Please wait. When you say please wait, what you're saying is, you have to wait this amount of time and then that will happen. That's not true. It's not wait this amount of time and that will happen. It's when the causes are right, then it will happen. So if it's causes that need to align for an effect to take place, to manifest, what is the meaning of fear and grief? And what is the meaning of attributing that or them to time? You know, to fix a problem, first we need to understand the problem. Incorrectly understanding the problem is worse than not understanding the problem at all. The wrong diagnosis is much worse than no diagnosis. When you say it is time that is my enemy, or that it is time that is my friend, either way, that's the wrong diagnosis. You say time is your friend when it brings you things that you want. It is not time that brought you anything you wanted. It was when did you get what you want? Now. It wasn't time that brought you things you want. So time is neither friend nor foe then, isn't it? Is it? Neither friend nor is it foe. Why? Because time has nothing to do in this game. You made it up. It's like when you were younger. Remember playing with dolls? Or you had an imaginary friend? Some people have had imaginary friends. People, young kids. They're like that. And they have imaginary friends. And then this imaginary friend, let's say, hits you. This imaginary friend. And now you're angry with your imaginary friend. What sense does that make? I'm angry with my imaginary friend. Why? He hit me. Huh? Say what? It's the same thing here. Time is an imagination. Time is a hallucination. It's a construct. It's a mental construct. We created time. We. Who are we? Sentient beings. We created time. Why? So that we could describe the duration of our beings. Our beings. Because when you are being, you need to be able to say how long you are being, right? That's why we created it. It wasn't there. It was never there. It wasn't discovered. Fire was discovered. America was discovered. Jupiter was discovered. Time was not discovered. Time is an invention. It's a mental invention. There is nothing to see, nothing to touch. You can touch a clock, you can touch a watch, you can't touch time. It's simply a mental construct. Invented so that sentient beings can talk about how long they have been, how long they will be, how long things will be, or how long things are about to be. All of this because being is so important. Why is being important? Well, in a world that is full of ignorance, being is what happens. You be. And when you be, you exist. Existence. Being leads to existence. Or becoming leads to existence. Ultimately, that's a being. It's being. So, if you can understand the world in this light, in a fresh light, in a new perspective, then you can begin to start asking some questions. Why do I wait for things to happen? What is the point in waiting for something to happen? What is the point of waiting for your next birthday? And sort of, you know, I don't mean this in a negative sense, but looking forward to it. Looking forward to something. What is the meaning of that? And why is it looking forward? When everything happens now, what is the point of looking forward? Really, the word should be, I'm looking now to something. But then if you understand that things happen only now, then you don't look to it with expectation. It happens when it happens. And when does it happen? It happens now. Expectation has nothing to do with it. Time has nothing to do with it. Really, in a world without time, there would be no expectation. In a world without expectation, there would be no time. Because you always expect something to happen in the future. Even if it is in the next moment, the next very moment, that's still the future. So in a world with no expectation, there will be no time. In a world where there is no time, there is no expectation. Which came first, do you reckon? Time or expectation? It's like a chicken and egg. Which came first, do you think? I won't go into that, but which came first? Expectation or time, do you think? Expectation came first. The moment expectation comes in, now there is vexation. When vexation comes in, now you need an answer as to when this vexation can be relieved. And then you need hope. What gives people hope? That what you are expecting will happen eventually. That's what hope is. Eventually what you want will happen. So, cross your fingers and keep waiting and hold your breath. When there is no expectation, there will be no time. Because time becomes irrespective. Time becomes insignificant. You disregard time. That is why Svakkhato Bhagavata Dhammo Sandhittiko Akaliko. What I have explained there in the last 2.5 hours or so is anicca in different words. In an anicca world, there cannot be time. So how come there is time in the world that we live in? Well, true, that is a convention. The world is anicca nevertheless. It always has been, It is and it will be. What is anicca after all? What happens, happens now. That is what anicca is. What happens, happens now. That is what anicca is. What is now again? When the causes are right, you get the effect. So what happens, happens when the causes are right. That is anicca. So nothing can happen if there are no causes for it. And if the causes are right, then there is nothing that can stop something from happening. All of this is contained within this word anicca. So in an anicca world, if we are not aware of this nature of anicca, if we are blind to this reality, to this truth, then what happens? If we believe that things happen not now, they happen in the future, they happened in the past, then we have this external dimension, time, we bring in to explain when these things will happen. Because now, if it's not when causes are right, then surely I can do something about it, right? If something doesn't happen because of causes, then surely I can do something about it to make it happen. It's a simple example. Let's say someone's trying to get the lid of a bottle. Okay, a guy's struggling with a... He's got no bottle opener. He's trying to get the lid off the bottle. If there are two friends nearby and one guy is trying to do this, before long, what's the other guy going to say? Give it here, man. Let me show you how it's done. Why does he say that? Because he doesn't accept anicca. Therefore, he has a role to play in this. Because what is his being right now? The bottle opener being. I am the bottle opener. Therefore, there is no bottle that I cannot open. Give it to me, and I will show you how it's done. That is how you feel at that point in time, in that moment in time. No? Whenever you see someone struggling with something, I don't mean like when you really want to help them, but usually when you watch them struggle with something, that starts to vex you. Someone's trying to turn the ignition on the car. It won't start. And what do people say? You know, they all become experts in car mechanics, don't they? You know, try pressing the clutch. You know, you got to wiggle the key a little bit and then try it. Not like that. The other way. This is the first time the guy got into the car. He's never done it before, but somehow he's become an expert. Why? Because somehow his being is now what? I am the car starting being. Or the car starter being. That is who I am. I know how to start a car. So I have a role to play here. Why? Because it is not cause and effect. I have a role to play here. And when I have a role to play, this poor guy cannot wait, because now time has come into the picture. See, because I have a role to play, so surely, even though the guy who sat in the driving seat can't start the car, I can. So if I can, why do I have to wait until he tries to play around with it, fiddle around with it and gets it started? So now there's a time element that has come into the picture. This time that I have to wait until the car starts is wasted time. It's a future event. It's a waste of time. You know, if you were to let me do it, I'll get it started, you know, just like that. Why are we wasting our time? Why are you wasting my time? Get out. Let me start the car. All this because the being I am being. I am what now? The car starter being. I can start a car. Let me show you how. I can open the bottle because I'm the bottle opener being. You can't even hit that nail straight. Give me the hammer. Let me show you how it's done. The guy's never held a hammer before. But here's the thing. He wants the hammer. He wants the nail driven into the wall straight. So that is what he wants. He doesn't understand or accept the principle of cause and effect. Therefore, the nail hitter being has been created. And now, he has a role to play in this scenario. It's not cause and effect driven, it's driven by me. It's the wrong person holding on the other end of the hammer right now. That's the problem. So let me have the hammer and let me show you how it's done. The problem is though, when you're holding the hammer and I'm the one who knows how to get the nail into the wall, right, we are now wasting time. Because I want that nail to go through the wall. And for as long as I want it to happen, you're wasting time. Because it's a vexation for me. Not seeing that nail go through the wall is a vexation for me. And if you're going to take half an hour to do it, man, that's my time. You're vexing me. Get out of the way. Let me show you how it's done. So you see, time has been created. So now he realizes this time is the problem. If I can only just get this time out of the way, then I can be the one on the other. I can be the guy on the other end of the hammer and drive the nail right through the wall. He doesn't accept. He doesn't realize. He doesn't acknowledge that it is cause and effect driven. Do you never feel sometimes when you see things like this happen, things like that happen, that if you were to do it, you would be able to do it without a problem? It's only because it's the wrong person trying to do it that's a problem? Do you at that point attribute it to cause and effect, that it's the right causes haven't lined up, that's why it's not happening? Do you not feel, let me show it. Let me show how to do it. Let me do it. I can do it. Because a being has been created. Starts with ignorance, ends at existence. Dependent on ignorance and attachment, existence has come arise, come alive. A being is created. So you see, try and see if you can make sense of all that. I know most of you can and most of you will already have. I appreciate it's an abstract concept. But I just want to share it with you because it's another way to look at the world as being anicca. This is anicca. At the end of the day, this is all anicca. What I have shared with you might sound very philosophical. It might sound very abstract. It might sound out of this world, but really what I explained to you was the nature of anicca. And when that has not been accepted, now what happens is you create an expectation, and that expectation is dukkha. But that expectation has been caused by ignorance and attachment. Because of not accepting the principle of cause and effect, expectation has been created. So when you don't accept, you will accept. Or rather, when you don't accept, you will expect. When you don't accept cause and effect, you will expect that things should happen according to your whims and fancies. You feel that you can demand. It's what you want that happens. This process this way of thinking is essenceless, it's meaningless, gets you nowhere, because this is simply an overlay over the truth. This overlay adds nothing to the real deal, adds nothing. It doesn't make things any easier. If anything, it only makes things harder, more difficult, more painful, because it introduces suffering, a problem that did not exist before now. I want to leave you with that then. Think about it. Everything happens now. So, we are going to have the next sermon when? Yeah, don't you get out of your chairs, because we're going to do it now, in the next sermon. Stay right where you are, because we'll start the next sermon. When? Right now. As soon as we do the merit transfer. When? Now. We'll invite the gods. When? We'll do that now. We'll start the next sermon now. How about, when are we going to finish the next sermon? Let's finish it now. When are you going to go back and listen to this sermon? I think you should do it now. Well, I suppose it depends on what time you're going to be having your lunch. When are you going to have your lunch? Oh, of course. So you can't listen to the sermon then, right? Maybe you can listen to the sermon over tea. When will you have tea? When? Now? What, lunch and tea both? You're a greedy bunch. Anyway, you work it out. So, this way, it's very easy to make a timetable like this. Isn't it? Because I've been asking you to prepare a timetable, right? So, all you need to do is write all the things you need to do, and then just write now. Right? So, wake up in the morning, or do the Buddha Puja, 15 minutes meditation, right? Talking to your children, and then going to work, and coming back home, and doing your homework, and going to school, right? All these things, when? Now. So, you don't need all those days going across the timetable, all the time slots. All of that you can do now. Because really, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, none of those days really existed, did they? That's all a convention. Do we discard and disregard convention? Oh no. Don't you make that fatal mistake. Living in society, living among others, living with friends, family, we always work in convention and with conventions and in adherence to convention. But this is simply something to understand, the absolute. It's something to comprehend. Comprehend the absolute, live and exist in convention. So make sure you don't forget that. Otherwise, you're in for big trouble. We don't want that. So last week we had the Poson Poya program, Metta Blossoms. And I was informed that a large number of you, I think mostly all of you, either watch the program live or watch the replays. And really what we wanted was for you to engage in those activities, to earn your merits, to put your hands together and to applaud the Sambuddhasasana, And I hope you all joined to see the unveiling of the new Buddha statue, because I promised that that would happen the previous week's sermon. The statue of the Bodhisattva, and then right next on the other side of that, the Buddha statue. And especially, did you see the two words that sat in between the two statues? No pain, no gain. May those words long ring in your ears. No pain, no gain. For any gain to happen, there has to be a pain that is endured. And that pain is not something that comes from outside, not necessarily. It is the pain of going through the internal transformation, the change, because we are set in our ways, unfortunately. That is the problem. It's like we are a molded cast. Sometimes in mud, some in plastic, some in iron. These are the nature of some people's minds. They are like an iron cast, very difficult to change. Some elastic, very easy to change. Some like water, very easy to change. You just change the vessel and then they take that shape. But some are like iron, very difficult to change. That's why I asked you the question, are you ready to change? A couple of weeks ago. But it is those who are willing to change, who are willing to endure the pain of change, who will ultimately gain and win and become victorious. Our great master went through that internal transformation and he showed us that it is entirely possible. So all that awaits is for you and I to follow the footsteps, his footsteps, the path that he taught us, and make that change within us. Because all of that is worthwhile. In the end, it will all be worthwhile. Right now, it might seem painful, it might seem difficult, challenging, exhausting, sometimes mentally. It'll stretch you mentally. It might seem mortifying, but in the end, it'll all be worthwhile. Short gains for long-term pain is meaningless, folks. Don't fall into that trap. Endure the pain long-term, endure the pain short-term, because in the long-term, there'll be much to gain. So, don't forget that. That is what I wanted you to think to yourselves. That is the resolve I wanted you all to make when you all joined us and witnessed the unveiling of the new Buddha statue. Okay? So, on that note then, we will conclude today's sermon. Let us take a moment to transfer merits and bring today's program to a close. Alright then, let us take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem and chanting Pirith and listening to the Dhamma and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. And first and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Nuhansi and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, and be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others or inviting others to join them. And may to the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. And may to the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer merits we have acquired to our devotees and friends in the monastery, who for the sake of merits
Continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. And may through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. And by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas and brahmanas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva as well as all the other gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Samudra Shasane. Let us all transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And may through the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our families, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in every way they could. Let us transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, and may all who have lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, including the most recent and prevailing one, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them, and may through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in woeful planes, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahats and mahanses in this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an arahat and mahanse or arahat mehin mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. On that note, we will conclude today's sermon. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you.